Hey guys, what's up? This is Jacques. Welcome back to Unpopular. I have a great show today, but there are two things I need to let you know. One, I'm really sick, okay? I'm on like death's door. I'm like Yolanda when she was holed up in her condo with the pill closet and no makeup and wrapped up in a dressing gown, except I actually am sick. I'm not faking it. So that's not fun. Two, I have a really great guest on today, okay? I have Thomas Kelly. He is a producer and showrunner from like all of your favorite housewife shows and all the, it's like, he's really amazing, great guest. And I had some audio issues. Now, I know sometimes I come on here and I go, oh my God, guys, like there's some problems with the audio, don't freak out. And then you listen, it's actually like totally fine. Well, there actually was audio issues this time. I won't go into the technical aspect of it because it's so boring, but basically I have this really expensive, fancy mic studio setup that's like very professional. And then the recording program didn't detect it and detected like the crappiest microphone that are on my headphones and recorded my end from that. So I sound like I'm on a cell phone at the bottom of the ocean underneath a giant soup can. Thomas thankfully sounds good. So that's the important thing, because really you want to hear from him. You already know my opinion on a lot of these housewife things. Thomas talks a lot. Thomas has a lot of tea. So his stuff's fine. So it's all good, you know, but I just wanted to warn you ahead of that. And there's some other things where it sounds like there's some like whatever. It's just not perfect audio, okay? And when I first heard it, I was like, I can't release this. You know, I'm not doing a podcast today. Like I freaked out. And then I calmed down. I'm like, no, people are still going to enjoy this. So, you know, I don't want to see a bad review. I don't want to get a bad comment. I don't want a DM saying what was wrong with the audio. I didn't like the audio. The audio didn't sound good. You know, great podcast, but you need to fix the audio. If any of you say that, I will track your fucking IP and I will hunt you down. Okay. So let's just pretend that it's perfect, because, you know, I like to be professional. Let's face it, there's a lot of really bad podcasts out there, okay? A lot of bad podcasts, especially in this like reality space, because it's just like any fucking couch potato at home that watches too much like Housewives or 90 Day Fiancé thinks they can have a podcast. And it's like their opinions are bland. The questions that they ask their guests are bland. The editing's really bad. The title of their podcast is lame. The artwork sucks. Like, I can't find one damn nice thing to say about a lot of these other podcasts. So I like to just keep mine at a really great level above that. So anything goes wrong, I'm like, ew, like don't lump me in with the, you know, I recorded and edited this on Anchor FM, because that's not my style. Secondly, I need to tell you, I totally poached Thomas Kelly from Heather McDonald on Juicy Scoop, because he was on Juicy Scoop a few days ago. And then a bunch of you actually messaged me going, Jacques, you have to have this Thomas Kelly on your show. And I was like, I do need to have Thomas Kelly on Unpopular, damn, because there's so much that I want to know. Now, Heather McDonald did a fantastic interview with him. She always does a great interview, and like kudos to her for like, you know, finding him and doing this. So you should definitely go and listen to the interview with Juicy Scoop after you listen to mine, if you haven't heard it already. And the thing is that Heather, like, she gets the Juicy Scoop, okay? So she asked him a lot about the big scandal with Heather Dubrow. So if you don't know this, Thomas Kelly is the producer at the center of the drama with Heather Dubrow on The Housewives of OC, pushing one of the producers. Remember Noella said that, and then Heather Dubrow denied it, and it became a whole thing, and it was a big storyline on the show. So Heather McDonald gets into that with him. Heather McDonald also asked Thomas about Vicky and Brooks's Cancergate. She really got the big stuff you want to know. The Amsterdam, Beverly Hills trip. You know what I wanted to know about? Tell me about Elizabeth Vargas. Isn't Emily Simpson an underrated housewife? Tell me about the COVID season. Tell me about Katie Ross working with her on season 4 of Potomac, okay? I wanted to just know what I wanted to know, okay? Just random, obscure stuff. This is for the real hardcore Housewives fans that just want to know the most random information. I was not thinking about you guys. I was not thinking about the audience. I was just like, what do I personally want to know? And that's what I asked. Now, there's still a lot of tea in there, okay? There's still a lot of insights into how the shows are produced. And so you'll still find it interesting, even if you don't care to hear, you know, 15 minutes on Eileen Davidson. But this is what I wanted to talk about, and I know that you'll still enjoy it. So it's fine. Before we get into that, I want to talk about a few other hot topics. This past week, I've kind of been obsessed with this AOC story. So AOC, the politician, she got arrested. People thought she didn't get arrested, but it turns out she actually did. And I think she posted her arrest record on Instagram or something to prove it. But she went to some pro-choice rally, okay, for like a photo op, basically. And she got arrested and it went viral because what happened was, look, she obviously went there knowing the cameras were going to be, that's what she does, okay? She's a performer. She's basically, AOC is basically a reality star. She's like Lisa Vanderpump. AOC and LVP, not much difference between them. And she goes to this pro-choice rally and then she's being either arrested or escorted out and she has her hands behind her back like she's handcuffed. And then she puts her hand up in the air like she's doing a, you know, power to the people, like a fist, right, to the crowd, and everyone cheers, all the AOC stands cheer. And then the question was like, wait, was she pretending that she was handcuffed and then she forgot and she put her hand up and then we see that she was like faking being handcuffed for the photo op and that was going viral. Now, I gave her the benefit of the doubt. I was like, and I did put this on my Instagram, I'm like, maybe she wasn't pretending to be handcuffed, giving her the benefit of the doubt, but when you are being escorted out by a security guard or a police officer, you do kind of have to walk with your hands behind your back. Is that like a protocol? Do you have to do that? So I was thinking maybe she was doing that. You know, the jury's still out on what she was doing or not, but people did think she faked being like fully, she wasn't even arrested, but apparently she was really arrested. But I was enjoying trying to work that mystery out. I mean, hats off to her. She certainly knows what she's doing. Like I said, she's like Lisa Vanderpump. And any reality star, really. But I was watching some old seasons of Beverly Hills to prep for my interview with Thomas Kelly. And I was actually specifically watching scenes with Eileen because I knew that I wanted to ask him about Eileen because I'm obsessed with her. And I was watching the reunion where, you know, the season where Lisa Vanderpump basically bullied Eileen and was like, was that when the affair started? And there was another scene in that season where Eileen opened up about how she had been in a violent relationship, like a domestic abuse situation. And then Lisa Vanderpump, being the horrible person that she is, went on her Bravo blog because that was when they had to write the blogs at the time. And she was like, oh, I've been in an abusive relationship too. I would never feel the need to, you know, talk about it publicly. I don't see the point. Why would anyone talk about it? Just so dismissive and gross. And she came off pretty bad, actually, saying that. And they brought it up at the reunion. And Lisa Vanderpump was copying it at that reunion because Lisa Rinna and Eileen were sort of really coming for her. Because that was when they said Lisa Vanderpump was the one that was really behind the Munchausen thing, not Lisa Rinna. So when they bring up this domestic abuse and how could you be so thoughtless to Eileen, Lisa Vanderpump goes into this whole fake performance of, I was in an abusive relationship too and he hit me just once. And then she's like trying to squeeze out a tear. There's like no tears or anything. And I'm just like, this is very AOC of you with this whole dog and pony show. And then everyone fell for it and everyone's like, oh, Lisa. Like they ended the reunion on the cliffhanger of Lisa Vanderpump opening up about that when it was like so fake. And everyone's like, oh, Lisa, we're so glad you opened up. We want to see more of this side of you. And I think Eileen is like, are you guys really falling for this shit? Anyway, moving on from that, there's some new Honey Boo Boo news. You guys know that I'm always on the Honey Boo Boo tip. Like, I'm always like putting her name into like Google News and like checking page six, like what's Honey Boo Boo done now? Well, I still have not watched the new season. Like I said, I couldn't find the episodes. And at this point, I'm too far behind to really catch up on the whole thing. But I do watch like the previews and the highlights on Instagram. And you know how Pumpkin has been raising Honey Boo Boo, right? Because fucking Mama June is just a hot mess out getting high. She got married to that, you know, and she got married to another junkie and left her kids behind. And Pumpkin has custody. Well, Pumpkin sues her for custody. But on top of that, she's going after Mama June for child support for Honey Boo Boo. So that's pretty interesting. I was like, wow, this season, like they're really going there. There's a lot to this season. So I thought that was interesting. And then I just saw on page six that Honey Boo Boo and her boyfriend, now you know she's in the age gap relationship. He's 21 at the moment. She's 6. He was 20, okay? But he's had a birthday and her 17th birthday is coming up. But currently she's 16 and he's 21. They're in the weird age gap relationship. Well, they're both getting gastric sleeve surgery together to lose weight. which is so horrendous at, like, especially at Honey Boo Boo's age, to be that young and to be getting a gastric sleeve. That's where they put the band around your stomach, so your stomach's smaller and you can't eat as much. And it's pretty much a failure, this procedure, because a lot of people just end up, they keep eating a lot anyway, and they either throw up or their stomach ends up getting, it stretches out again because they can't stick to it. Because a lot of them, like, they don't change their lifestyle. They go and get the gastric sleeve because they can't really control their eating or anything else otherwise. And I just don't think it's that successful. Yes, some people have had a lot of success with it, by the way. If you can stick to the healthy diet afterwards getting it, I think it really helps. But look, Honey Boo Boo is not going to stick to a healthy diet just because she has a gastric sleeve, because the statement that she put out, well, her manager put out, Gina Rodriguez, who is this, shout out to Gina Rodriguez, by the way, this isn't shade, she's a great manager, but she's a former porn star, and then she left porn and started managing all of these, like, Michael Lohan, you know, Mama June, like, the bottom of the barrel. This is how she got started, and then she started doing all these publicity stunts for them, and now she's, like, really successful, and she has, like, this whole management firm, and she has, like, bigger clients and stuff, but she's, like, really savvy, and she's the one that was behind Mama June's whole makeover, remember, from Not to Hot, Mama June. So Mama June, I think, got gastric sleeve, which didn't work. She put the weight back on and got back on drugs and got on all this other stuff. But anyway, she's behind this, and she put out this statement saying, look, you know, Honey Boo Boo has made changes to her diet and she's exercising, but she's not getting the results that she wants. So she feels like she, you know, she has to get the gastric sleeve. And I'm thinking, I follow Honey Boo Boo on Instagram, and I'm sorry, she's not eat healthy. You go on her Instagram and she's eating, like, nuggets and these, like, drinking fucking these, like, soda sugary drinks and eating, like, hang on, let me go on her fucking Instagram now. She honestly has the worst diet. Let me see. Oh, here she is at some, it's not Dunkin' Donuts, but it's like Dunkin' Donuts. She eats shit. And, you know, her version of exercising, if you come from a background where you never exercise, you never have a healthy lifestyle, remember, back on Here Comes Honey Boo Boo, the original reality show, they were eating that sketty, which I think was just, like, cheap spaghetti with a ton of tomato sauce, which tomato sauce is just sugar, and then, like, cheese dumped on top and then oil and something else. It was so vile, and they would eat that for dinner every day. So her version of, like, eating healthy is probably not having sketty every day and just going for a walk outside. I don't think she probably doesn't really understand how strict you need to be with your eating, how strict you need to be with your exercise to, like, really see major results. I mean, I lost weight recently and I put it back on because I slipped up and I started eating a lot of peanut butter on toast at night. I usually ban myself from having peanut butter in the house, but I was like, oh, I'll treat myself. And, like, all I was eating was peanut butter on toast. And I've been eating sweets again, which I'd previously banned. And then all the weight that I lost, I've put back on, and now I'm, like, I'm back on the wagon now. But you've just got to be really strict. So I don't think she even has an understanding of diet and exercise. And for people to be signing off on her getting a gastric sleeve before, she's not even 17 yet. She turns 17 in August. That is so crazy to me. And then the boyfriend getting it too. Look, they're both really fat, but they just need to eat better and exercise. So that's wild. I can't believe they're doing that. And, you know, Honey Boo Boo as well, she's getting a little salty because she's usually a joy. But I saw her in a recent interview and they were asking her about the age gap relationship, and, like, she was pretty annoyed. I don't think she likes talking about it, understandably. And Pumpkin was with her, and Pumpkin was like, look, here's the deal. She gets good grades in school. We're aware of everything that's going on. She's very mature for her age, which I do believe. Like, look, Honey Boo Boo's been through a lot, so she's probably is more mature than the average 16-year-old. They said, when he comes over, we have an open door policy. You know, it is what it is. I mean, what are you going to do? I moved out of home at 16. Like, I know that it's, like, unsavory there. I mean, it is legal, by the way, but it's still unsavory. But I was dating guys that were over 18 when I was 16. I moved out of home from the tiny small town to the big city by myself. And I ended up getting help from family members, which was good because I was so stubborn that, like, I would have let myself be homeless. I was just like, I'm doing it and you can either support me or not. And, you know, they set me up with a family friend to stay in till I could, like, get a job and stuff like that. But if they hadn't helped me, like, I would have just stayed there from being so stubborn. And I'm sure that Honey Boo Boo's pretty stubborn being a child star. And if you said to her, you're not allowed to date this guy, like, she's going to do it anyway. She's going to be running off and sneaking out, and she can make her own money because she is famous. She'll probably drop out of school to be with this guy because that's just what you like when you're that age. So I do think that they're making the right decision, just going, look, we're just going to support it and be as hands-on with this as possible. And yeah, we, you know, we will have him over at the house and we'll have the bedroom doors open and things like that. I think that's smarter than just trying to, like, cut it off, because I think Honey Boo Boo is going to do what Honey Boo Boo wants to do. But she's not liking being asked about this, and I think she's a bit over it. Anyway, what else? I watched Southern Charm. I caught up on the new season. They did a race thing on Southern Charm again, which I know that last season was all about race. I didn't watch the last season, but I saw the trailer and they were doing storylines about, like, tearing, you know, the statue, the Confederate statues down. They were talking about COVID. They were, what else? Oh, Catherine sent, like, a racist emoji. So there was this girl came on last year, Leva, who's a new girl, and she's Persian. She's really beautiful. And she was sort of like, you know, you guys have, like, white privilege. And I think she was sort of coming in a bit like Ebony. I don't know if she was as calculated as Ebony or she's being genuine. I didn't watch the season, so honestly, I can't judge her. But she was doing that. And there's this other girl, Vanita, who I really like. She's really beautiful. She's a model. She's black. And she's a full-time cast member now. And I think last season, she was sort of there and she questioned, I think her and Leva questioned Catherine because Catherine had sent, like, a racist emoji. So that season was a while ago because Southern Charm actually went on a bit of a hiatus after that season, I think. And it's back now and Vanita's, like, starting some shit unnecessarily, and she tried to start a race thing and it actually backfired, and, like, no one's really on her side with it. So there's this other new girl on the show. There's a lot of new people this season. There's this other new girl, Olivia. She's supposed to be Austin's girlfriend. I think they've had one date because they went on a date last episode and they're like, oh, this is the first time we've been out together. I'm like, how did you get cast on the show and you've, like, you're barely even together? I think they were just desperate to find people. So I don't even know if they even have anything really between them. But anyway, she's quite fiery. You can see that she's sort of trying to be the new Madison because she's buddied up with Catherine. Catherine's obviously the most toxic person on the show that, like, really doesn't have any friends. So I think Olivia's, like, positioning herself in there to come in and, like, cause some trouble. Good for you. You're new on a reality show. You want to make some waves. Vanita's doing that too. Go for it, okay? We like it as viewers. But they go to this, like, birthday party, and then Catherine's saying something about how she's, like, raising her kids, and then Vanita, like, out of nowhere is bringing up the emoji stuff from last season, and she's like, well, are you going to teach your kids that, you know, it's not right to send racist emojis? And, like, Catherine's just like, okay. And Catherine is like, you can tell Catherine's fuming, but she also, she knows she's kind of being baited into an argument. So she's kind of, like, through gritted teeth, just, like, rolls with it a bit. And she's just like, yeah, I am not going to teach my children to do that. And Vanita's like, okay, good. And then Vanita tries it with Olivia because Vanita and Olivia got into it on the premiere. It was sort of a dumb fight, actually. I think it was sort of a bit forced for the premiere. But they're sort of like, well, why do we get off on the wrong foot? And Olivia's like, well, you brought up race within, like, the first 5 minutes, because she did. When they had that fight, Vanita brought up something about Catherine being racist. And Olivia was like, you know, I didn't even know you. I knew you for 5 minutes and I'm already hearing you bring up racism. And I was just like, I'm not doing this. You're not going to, like, cancel culture me out of this. And Vanita's sort of like, well, we need to have, like, you know, these conversations. And Olivia's like, yeah, I'm not doing this. Like, let's just whatever. Bye. And, like, Olivia really shut it down. And Vanita kind of looked stupid. Vanita looked like, I tried it with the race card, and, like, Olivia was literally like, you're not going to cancel culture me with this shit. Like, bye. And it's such a different reaction to what we've been getting. Like, you know, the last few years, the white castmates, they've been so scared of getting canceled. They're like, yes, let me sit down and listen or whatever. And this girl was like, no, I'm not doing this. Like, this ain't happening. I'm not taking the bait. You're not going to make me look like a racist. And Vanita looked kind of stupid, and people on social media aren't really on Vanita's side with it. And even Vanita in her own confessional looked like she knew that she sort of blew it. And I kind of felt bad for her because it's like, look, They were probably encouraged to do this last season, okay? Last season, you know, the political turmoil and stuff was so intense and so out of control. They obviously, I mean, I just rewatched the trailer of last season. The whole trailer was Confederate statues and racist emojis and COVID and political issues, and we're diversifying these white Southern people. So, you know, that was her last experience on the show, and now she's a new cast member. She's been upgraded. There's not, I like the show, like it's pretty entertaining, but there's not a ton of drama with the girls. Like it's a little forced. So she probably felt like, you know, I've got to make something happen. She tried, it didn't work, it kind of flopped. I still think she's good on the show. I've got to see more of her to like make a judgment, but I think it was just like a bit of a foot and mouth. I don't know if she's a bit, I don't think she's like as annoying as like Ebony or something. Like I do think she'll probably drop it from now and she'll like chill out a bit. So whatever, Southern Charm, it's fun. And I just thought that Olivia's reaction was very interesting. And Olivia hasn't got backlash from what I've seen. That's the big difference. Last year, if, you know, a non-white cast member came up like, you know, Tiffany Moon or Garcelle or something and said, you know, Ebony, we need to talk about race. You know how Ramona reacted when Ramona didn't want to sit down and listen to Ebony's, you know, critical race theory lessons. Social media went nuts on like Ramona or anyone that didn't want to play that game. And then with this episode and Olivia being like, yeah, we're not doing this, like no one really seemed outraged at Olivia. Like I think people like, yeah, we actually, it's not entertaining to watch. We don't want to watch it. We don't like it. We're over it. We're over the last few years and we just want like a fun reality show. Lastly, I did start watching the Resident Evil Netflix show. I liked it, but when I say that I liked it, I just want to add, don't go and watch it because I said that I liked it, because I'm not saying that it's good, because it actually, I think, has the worst audience score of all time on Netflix. Like the audience, the reviews, I think, have been like, whatever, okay. There's a lot of shit on Netflix, but it has like the worst viewer audience score ever. Like people kind of hate it. I don't know why. It's honestly not that bad. Like compared to the movies are like unwatchable. I think this is better than the movies. And I told you guys last week that I like the video games, but I'm kind of into it. And I'm kind of interested by like the reaction to it, right? Because there are people that I know that have really bad taste. I have good taste, honestly. I have very good taste in film and like scripted TV and stuff. I just do. Like, it's just a fact. I really do. And there are people that I know that have really bad taste, which is a lot. A lot of you have shocking taste. A lot of you will watch anything that's just because it's trending on Netflix. And several people that I know that have very terrible, crappy, like mainstream taste, they have said they didn't like Resident Evil. And I'm like, but you usually like shit. Like you like stuff that's like awful. So this should be like your favorite show and you don't like it. And then other people that I know that actually have like pretty good taste, they've like come back to me and they're like, you know, it's not that bad. I'm kind of into it. And I'm like, yeah, there's like something about it. I don't know. Like it's stupid, but I'm kind of into it. I've only watched a few episodes. I'm going to try and watch some more. Some more tonight, but I like it. And it was number one on Netflix. Netflix is like such trash though. It's so funny that when Netflix first came out, it was kind of seen as like, you know, like premium content, that it was like better than, you know, television. And now Netflix is literally like, you know, back in the day when they still had video stores, you know, DVDs and VHS, Blockbuster and stuff. And you go into Blockbuster and they'd have the new releases of all the stuff that was just in the theaters. So they would have, you know, the big, like the blockbusters, but they'd also have like the, you know, the Oscar movies and like the indie movies that had been in the boutique cinemas and had, you know, won, you know, Cannes Film Festival, you know, best selection and stuff. They'd have all that stuff. And then they would have all of the straight to video, just like crap, like just straight to DVD, like shit that you've never heard of. And like, that's Netflix is like 90%. That stuff, and then they'll have like a few prestige shows that are like really popular, but then everything else is just garbage. And I'm like, wow, like no wonder Netflix has lost all these subscribers, because like it really is crap. And I remember thinking years ago when Netflix was sort of like the first big streaming giant and it was so popular, and then all these other streamers were like popping up, and I was thinking, how is anything going to compete with Netflix? Like Netflix is just so popular that I don't see any of these other streaming services being able to get a foot in the market. But then you fast forward and there's like a lot of, there's a lot of real competitors to Netflix, because they just have better shows. Like the HBO Max here in Australia, it's called Binge, and that has a lot of the HBO shows. And yeah, those shows are just better than whatever's on Netflix. And I love Tubi, which is the free one with all the trash. I mean, that's really like trash stuff. I love Tubi. I love all the HBO things. Yeah, Netflix is the one that I watch actually the least. The only thing I watch on Netflix is like Selling Sunset and Resident Evil now. I don't even watch Stranger Things, sorry. I did watch season one. I liked Stranger Things, but I'm just like, I'm good with one season. I don't need to continue this story. Anyway, guys, we're going to get into the episode. Yeah, Thomas Kelly, it's a great interview, especially if you want to know all the behind-the-scenes stuff of The Housewives. Make sure you're following me on social media, at UnpopularJP. For my Patreon subscribers, you'll get some new stuff sometime this week, either tomorrow or in a few days. I'll see how I'm feeling. I'll see if I am half dead from COVID or not. And yeah, thanks a lot. Bye, guys. All right, guys, I have one of the biggest and best producers and showrunners in reality TV today. He has worked on so much, like The Real Housewives of OC, Potomac, Dallas, Beverly Hills, Netflix's Selling Tampa. He's worked with like WeTV, TLC. I mean, he's really done it all. So please welcome Thomas Kelly.
Oh, thank you so much, Jacques. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I heard about you on Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop. So shout out to Heather. I'm kind of like poaching one of her guests, but it was such a great interview. But I'm such like a big OC fan that I have like so much more to ask you. First of all, speaking of Heather McDonald, do you think we'll ever see her on The Housewives of OC? Because people have talked about that for years, wanting her on there because she's friends with all the cast.
She is friends with the cast. I don't think so. That's not to say that she wouldn't be great on the show, but, you know, she has a very distinctive role as a comedian and commentator and, you know, podcaster. And, yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times, you know, you can't cross those lines sometimes. If she wasn't involved in the podcast world or, you know, this successful comedian, I think she would be perfect as a housewife, right?
Do you think it's changing now, though? Because, like, we're getting Tamra back on OC, and she does the two T's in a pod. I mean, Heather DeBrow has a podcast. Like, a lot of the women are doing, like, I know in Atlanta they do Dish Nation, and they'll talk about the shows a bit on there. So is it changing a bit, maybe?
I think it depends.
The worlds?
I do think it depends. I think it depends on the person. It depends on their background. It depends on their history. I think the likes of Tamra, believe me, there were conversations. There was a lot of behind-the-scenes chatter about, oh, can Tamra be on the show and have a podcast as well? Is that fair? And then, you know, there were rumors that some other the cast members might have been saying, well, you know, she's on a podcast and she talks about behind the scenes and you can't do that and that's not fair and that's blah, 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 blah. But I think with her, because she's such one of the original housewives on any of the franchises, I think she started, what, season two or something? She got the acceptance of the role. And OC fans are so hungry for nostalgia that, you know, Tamra was just like, she was just, to use the pun, two T's in a pod. She was teed up perfectly for a return here.
Well, you know, it's funny with Tamra because I have a lot of unpopular opinions about the Housewives all the time. It never agrees with most people. And I've been a day one Tamra stan. Like, she's my all-time favorite housewife and she always has
she's
been.
She's amazing.
And before she got fired for the first time, I swear to God, I think I was the only Tamra fan. Like, I would go on, you know, on social media with all the other fans. I was like the only Tamra fan account and everyone was like, fire Tamra. Then they fire Tamra. And as soon as she's fired, everyone's like, we want Tamra back. And now I think a couple years later, I don't think she's ever been more popular than she is right now. Like, people
Isn't
seem
that
to
interesting?
Love her.
I think it's interesting. I think that there's you're hitting on something there that's really important, which is a lot of the viewers, if you don't like someone, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're not good for the show, right? So I think Tamra's a perfect example of that. Like, even though she has so many haters, like, at the end of the day, everyone has to admit, Tamra's great at what she does. She knows this game. She's outspoken. She's fiery. She's confident. She's gorgeous. You know, she's funny. She's quirky. You know, she has the history on the show. I think what happened, Jacques, is that Tamra's been on the show for so long, and OC is such a long-running show. It's, you know, going into season 17. So it's like, when you're on a show that long, people start sniffing out like your methods, right? And I think that what was happening with Tamra was people were just getting sort of tired of the shit stirring type branding brand of Tamra. And then once she was gone, like you said, they were like, oh my God, we missed that so much. So I think now they're going to be more, they're going to be more forgiving with that because, you know, OC is a tough show to cast and we're missing, you know, the show's missing some elements. And I think everyone's hoping that Tamra's going to, you know, sort of fill at least part of that void and bring back the sauce that she brings so well.
Well, the same thing would happen with Kyle on Beverly Hills. I mean, Kyle at this point is basically just an on-camera producer and people
My
don't
gosh,
like
you're
it.
But so right.
If you got rid of Kyle, it would be very different, I think.
It would be.
And
I mean, what do you think? Like, I think Kyle is so brilliant at what she does because she has the longevity also, and she does know how to play the middle ground. She knows how to stir the pot, but also sort of remain connected to these women in a meaningful way. But when does that run out is the question.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why she brings on the sisters all the time. Squeeze every last drop out of things that she can. Was one last question about Tamra. Was she the easiest housewife to work with? Because she says that she is. She tells me, I'm the easiest to work with on OC.
Oh, she's so full of it. No, Tamra, okay, so it's complicated, right? Tamra is a professional. In that regard, she is wonderful to work with. But look, when anything gets rough, when it gets tough in these shows and they're in a, you know, and the housewives are in an uncomfortable position, none of them really are that easy, right? It's like, you know, you're not comfortable and you don't, this isn't the way you want things to go. So it's going to be a little difficult to get them, their head back in the game. But with that said, she's a consummate professional. She shows up. She knows what she's doing. She has an opinion. You can always rely on her to contribute in some capacity, whether it's the funny parts or the dramatic parts or, you know, whatever it is that Tamra's up to. So if you take a step back and look at it like that, I would say that that's probably where Tamra's coming from when she says I'm easy to work with, because she's basically translating that into I'm good on the show. And she is.
Who is the easiest housewife to work with?
Oh, gosh. Well, okay. The easiest housewives to work with are, a lot of them are, oh, geez, how do I single them out? Because you're going to have them calling me and saying, you know, I'm the nicest. I would say that there are some people, you're talking about Orange County specifically, right?
So any franchise that you've worked on, because you've worked on a lot of them, is there one that stands out as just the easiest in terms of they always bring it, they're nice to production, like it's just an easy ride?
I can speak diplomatically about that. I would say on Potomac, Ashley is a joy to work with. And she's messy, right?
Oh my God.
Yeah. She's messy, but you know what? She's great to work with. She's like a producer's dream. I would say that just off the top of my head, and sorry, cast members who I'm leaving off the list, but Dallas isn't on anymore, so we don't really care about that, do we?
I care about Dallas.
Okay. I thought that Stephanie Holman was, I mean, we know she's a joy, right? And that translates to on and off camera. Like, okay. That's not an act.
Wait, there's a rumor about Stephanie Holman, which I think is bullshit. I think that a lot of these fan rumors on Housewives Twitter are all garbage. But there's this rumor that's gone around for years that, like, Stephanie's husband, like, owns part of the production company, and then because of that, she gets preferential treatment.
Oh, my God, that's a rumor.
Yeah, that's not true, right? That's bullshit.
No, that would be such a conflict of interest, right?
Exactly.
But that's funny that people would start rumors like that. That's
been going for years. And also, Leanne, I had Leanne on the podcast. I love Leanne.
She's great.
Does not like Stephanie. She thinks that Stephanie is the most manipulative and shadiest on that whole cast. What do you think? Stephanie comes off like the nicest.
She really does. But I think that she has a little a side to her that is you know, unpredictable, or maybe she has her, you know, cunning ways. I think they all do, right? Otherwise, why would any of them be on the show? But the ones who are so likable and sweet and really put on that that sort of air, if it's an air or if it's natural, whatever, you become surprised to hear that other cast members are like, well, they're the shadiest one in the group. But Leanne and Stephanie, they have a distinctive sort of, you know, conflict there.
Well, that's been my experience just work. So, you know, I work at like Daily Mail and I've worked in media for a long time. Now I've done the podcast. And my experience generally is that often whoever comes off like the nicest and is the fan favorite is usually the shadiest and most manipulative. And the villains are often, they're just the realest ones.
That could be true. That can be often, very, very true. I think there's others that are just like in your face, obvious villains, right? And they're not even trying to hide it. But you're right. Yeah. A lot of them are, you know, they're maneuvering without you kind of seeing it.
Okay, one of my most unpopular takes, and people hate me for this, but I loved OC season 15, the COVID season.
Oh,
I thought it was
great.
Really good. Yeah,
Thank you.
Thought that it did not deserve any of the hate that it got. I mean, people kind of came in wanting to hate it because there was a lot of negativity around OC. So yep. I think there was a lot of like bias to it.
I agree.
I just found that season so real and authentic. I feel like it went back to the old school OC where it was I still liked the drama on there, but also it was like following them individually with very real, raw stories of things that they were going through in their lives. And it didn't feel, I mean, it probably wasn't as produced because you couldn't produce it with COVID protocols and stuff. And it just felt real and really interesting. And I think there was so much there. There was like Gina going through her stuff with Matt. There was Emily's husband, Shane, was dying from COVID.
Literally.
Bronwyn's stuff was, you know, unbelievable. The political feuds, which I found really interesting. Because, you know, Bronwyn and Kelly both represented like opposite ends of the spectrum of what was going on then, and that neither of them were scared to share their opinion on it. I really, really liked that season.
So great to hear you say that, because I was very fond of that season too. And I think we did some things that were not typical. And that's why maybe some people were critics of it. And I always, you know, I always like to think that good quality entertainment isn't necessarily the most popular, right? Like, I think we did something that was groundbreaking, right? In a lot of ways. And I know a lot of people, the critique was like, we went through COVID. We want to see that shit. We want to do this and do that and, you know, be entertained. And it's like, yeah, well, guess what? This is really what's happening. And this is a real reminder here that you're watching these women in their authentic selves, in their authentic environment. And I love what you said. It's like, we couldn't produce that. Like, we were shut down for 3 months. And this is something that people don't understand about the show, right? And even Bravo, like, they just want a product, right? They want the show, and the viewers want the show, and they want their 18 episodes or whatever it is, good quality show. And, you know, we had way more material than 14 episodes, but we cut it down to what we thought was each episode really good, right? That's what you want. You want a really nice finished product. So we went to Bronwyn's vow renewal, and then we got back. I remember going to Palm Springs and everyone's like, do we shake hands? Do we bump elbows? Like, COVID was kind of moving in quickly. And we got back and, you know, I got a call from the production company that I work with, and they were like, we have to shut down. And I was like, what? My God, we all were in that sort of zone then. So we were shut down.
Well, you were getting so much stuff going. That's one thing as well that I feel like people don't really give the show, like, they're not understanding of, is that it was when COVID hit, OC was right at that pivotal moment of like when we're off to the races and all the storylines are coming together.
In Palm Springs, right? Yeah, it was all coming together. And like, you know, Elizabeth was finally finding her feet too. And I think she had a really tough time because, you know, all of them did, because we got shut down and we didn't get to flush out the stories in a way that would have been really satisfying had we had the time to do it. And, you know, we came back, Jacques, like 3 months later, and we had 2 weeks to finish it. So it was insane. And so we were like, okay, we're all going to get tested for COVID and we're going to go to Lake Arrowhead. And then, as we know, Shannon couldn't come because she tested positive, and we know what was going on with Emily. So it was really hard to, you know, have that time to breathe and to really flush out the stories in a meaningful way. But that doesn't mean that they weren't powerful for what they were. And I agree with you. I think that season had so much potential to go even beyond what we were able to achieve and be like a real standout season. But we just, you know,
I agree.
Didn't have the time.
One of the, I mean, yeah, and I loved the Bronwyn stuff. I mean, I miss Bronwyn a lot on
she was a great housewife. And again, maybe not that popular, but she was really good entertaining TV, whether you liked her or you didn't like her. I think she had huge potential, but, you know, sometimes these shows, like, they want to play it a little bit safer and you get back to what
one
the formula
the best
that works.
Scenes, was when she was going crazy in quarantine, and they interrupted her, and she screamed at her daughter and her husband, and she was like, "Can I just talk?" Like, the narcissism was off the charts, but it was so good. I mean, it was so raw. Good to watch.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, it was like real stuff.
And, brave. She came out as a lesbian, and she came out as an alcoholic. And
it was interesting going, oh, well, is this a story? Obviously, we know now what it was actually real, but that was still interesting to go, oh, is she addicted to fame and she's made it up, or is it real? Like, that was interesting as a viewer to figure out.
I think
that
that's interesting too. And that was probably her downfall, right? Is because everyone thought she was so thirsty for attention that, she'd make these things up, which was very risky as a viewer or as a critic to even suggest that, even if she, oh my God, like, we saw this woman, it was like, either she's a great actress or she like really was going through the shit, you know?
Well, Kelly went there, which I loved because, you know, Kelly will say it.
Oh, she will.
Another unpopular opinion that I have is that I think Gina and Emily are great and they get so much undeserved hate. Like, I think they really do their job well. Like, I kind of look at Gina a bit like a modern Laurie Peterson of seeing the, you know, where she's gone through, and there, you know, there's really an arc there of her glow up and everything and dealing with her family drama and then getting to where she is now. And then I think Emily is really underrated. I think the biggest criticism Emily gets is that she says too much in the confessional and not in person, which I would agree with. But outside of that, I think she has a lot of Tamra qualities, which I'm sure they would both hate me saying that because they both hate it.
I don't think so. I think you're right in everything you said. And by the way, both of them, wonderful to work with on and off camera. Like, both Gina and Emily, the consummate professionals. Back to your
question. I felt like Emily was almost producing season 15. Like, she was really stepped in where Tamra was, and a bit like, she knows how to keep a story moving, and she knows how to like get certain conversations out. And I think she does a really good job, but it's a bit more subtle, so people don't see how.
Although season 16, people were criticizing her because it was a little too blatant, right? Like, they thought it was. But she is, I think what we love about her is that she gives that voice. She brings clarity to things that are very muddled sometimes within this group. And because she's a lawyer, she has that natural instinct. And I've always urged her to go there and interview, you know. And I think we saw her in her confessionals as she's been on the show. She's evolved into this very good, she's very good in interview, which is what you're also sensing, is like, she does spill a lot in the interview because she's gotten so good at it that she takes what happens in the verite and she just takes it to a whole new level. But that's why we love her, you know, and I think they're good. And I think people love their relationship. I think they have such a real bond and they love each other so much. Like, season 14 was insane when we went to Miraval in Arizona, and they were just clashing.
Oh,
and they
I loved
the
that.
Jealousy
that
was there, and you could see it. I was like, oh my God, these women are just so in love with each other as friends. And this hurts. This goes deep. Like, it was brutal, and you want to see it, and then you want to see them make up, and they do that every time, and it's great.
Yeah, I think they get so much undeserved hate. I think the only issue that I have with OC, it's not the storylines, it's not the cast, it's just the constant turnover of cast and constant firing. That's the one thing that I just think is the issue, and I think it began with getting rid of Heather Dubrow the first time, which I didn't really understand why they would get rid of one of the main people. And then, you know, Peggy Salahian, who I've interviewed her, she's really nice, but she wasn't a good fit on the show.
Yeah.
And then it was like,
beautiful was woman, great lifestyle, but had a hard time sort of engaging in this forum. Yeah.
It just didn't work. And then
husband was great, wasn't he, Nico?
Yeah.
No, Deco. Deco.
Yeah.
So
he
funny.
Was more of a housewife.
He was the housewife.
And then, you know, Lydia came back and then she was let go, which I actually think Lydia is quite good on the show both times. I think her Doug's Balls storyline was not great. But I think in terms of how she works in the group dynamic, I think she's really good. I would have liked to see her stay as like a friend of the show, but
interesting. She's like, that kind of person that has that sort of just really kind, innocent, demeanor. And then she gets a little messy behind the scenes. I think you're hitting on a lot of things there, Jacques, that's important. It's like, you know, with this franchise, and a lot of times they don't have time to breathe. You don't have time for people to like settle in. And if they're not nailing it, and the second they're back or they're first introduced on the show, there's no time for it. And that, I think you're right. Like, it is, you do get a little fatigue of the turnover, and it's the hardest show. And I've said this before, it's the hardest show to cast because there's such a small pool of people. And usually those great candidates that we come across, their husbands don't want to participate because they're high powered attorneys or doctors or dentists. And they're like, I'm not doing this. This is too crazy. But, you know, I think, you know, once in a while you strike gold, you know, and we all thought Bronwyn was that person, you know, from the beginning. And a lot of people still think she's great. And a lot of people are like, I'm glad she's gone, whatever.
I think she should have stayed. I mean, but there's so many, if you look at everyone, because then it was like getting rid of Tamra and Vicky, and then it was getting rid of, yeah, Bronwyn, Elizabeth and Kelly. And now it's Noella and Dr. Jen. That's like, okay. Even if
Jock, that was my story as an EP on the show. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you're going to let me take over this amazing franchise, but you're getting rid of all these people and bringing in all these other people that I have to like move mountains.
So you don't have a say on who's hired and who's fired. You just have to work with who you're given.
Yes. Essentially, although our opinion matters, it's like, it's basically Bravo makes all the decisions. The production company weighs in heavily, and then I support and put in my opinion however I see fit. And then, but Bravo ultimately makes the decision for sure. But we go out and we hire, you know, someone who goes and looks at people, brings them to the production company. We screen them, we interview them, and then if Bravo likes them, then we'll go and we'll do a shoot, you know, and see how, like almost like a camera test to see how they do, and then from there, Bravo makes a decision.
Were you gutted when they cleaned house after 15? Because it was almost like you didn't even get to film a real season with them due to COVID. It's like, can we just film a real thing with? Because I think they all have. I mean, one thing I really wanted to see was with what was going on with Bronwyn, mm-hmm. When she was running off to New York with the lesbian lover and leaving the kids in OC, you know, because OC is such about kind of suburban moms and it has that suburban vibe. I want to see, well, how do these more typical Newport housewives react to seeing a mother run off to New York with her? You know, they're going to be judging that. That's going to be really interesting. And then there was so much with Elizabeth, with the cult stuff. Yes. I'm like, there's so much more in there. Like she could have been going to therapy on camera. She could have gone back to the, you know, like to deal with, like, there's so much there.
There was so much.
Kelly is like a superstar.
She's so funny, isn't she? She really is.
What did you think when they just cleaned house there? Were you supportive of that?
I mean, look, it's hard because, you know, I get so close to all of them and I see redeeming qualities in everyone and I see potential. But when you know, Bravo and the powers that be sort of take a step back and have a bird's eye view and you know, and they really do rely on the feedback from the viewers, you know, like they do.
Oh, so they do take that into account.
They do. They really listen to them. And I think that
they should stop.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. Like, I think there's situations where, but then there's that when Heather was released the first time, when she was fired the first time, that was because Heather was very popular, although very popular on the show. She wasn't giving us the access to her house, right? Because she was going through the remodel. And Bravo was like, okay, no, you're not going to power play us.
Wasn't she going to do the house the next season?
Well, yeah, she would have.
Doing it on her own.
But she was doing it on her own terms. And then she gave like an exclusive to like E! Entertainment or something. And it was like, we didn't get it on the Housewives. And there was, I mean, I don't know. I might be misremembering it, but it was something like that. And so when you sort of power play with Bravo, like, you know, or you sue them or you refuse to do certain things, they're not going to tolerate that. They're going to be like,
it seems
next.
Like they tolerate it with somehow. I mean, I feel like they let Lisa Vanderpump just get away with.
Well, you have a point there. You have a point because it's like, it's depends on the scenario, right?
Yeah.
And it's also the executive in charge. Do they like Lisa Vanderpump or do they like Heather Dubrow? Are they willing to invest or not? Yeah, you're right.
Is there any truth to, I mean, Kelly says that she was let go for her kind of political opinions and her social media scandals. Is there any truth to that? Or is it just more that, look, the network had to choose between, you know, Kelly and Heather or, you know, a certain mix of people and the two aren't going to work together. So
I think what we loved about Kelly Dodd, she was a brilliant housewife, right? From the beginning. And I worked with her first season and followed her through her career. I just missed season 13 when I was off doing Potomac in Dallas. She's great to work with, by the way. And, you know, it's funny because people are like, oh my God, she must be such a nightmare because she's so fiery, but she's actually not. She does listen to her producers. She works well with us. I think what happened was because of the cultural climate and because we weren't shying away from speaking on these issues, I think some of her viewpoints that she's told me were always sort of her stances on things. Like, it wasn't new because she met the Fox News reporter, Rick Leventhal, right? It was just that she had the forum to sort of speak out. And I think there was a lot of backlash for it. I think that, you know, Bravo is typically, the viewers are, you know, a little more progressive. They're a little more forward thinking and inclusive. And Kelly was sort of, you know, spewing out some of the things that we were hearing on the other side of things. And I think it just didn't settle well. Although it created conflict and drama and we didn't shy away from it. Bronwyn being sort of the representative, if there were one, from the sort of the Black Lives Matter movement and more progressive causes, she did not, you know, and Kelly didn't shy away from giving her opinions. But, you know, we give them a very fair forum to discuss these things. I interview them very deeply. I interviewed them from my basement, like a studio like you're in, from the computer that whole season. I did all the interviews. We did it on iPhone because we couldn't physically go in, and we set up this contraption to interview them. So anyway, I spent hours and hours and hours, and Kelly had multiple opportunities to, you know, redeem herself or to say, no, that was misunderstood. But she stood by what she said, and that was really who she was. And I think that the response indicated that Bravo was going to probably go in a different direction, unfortunately, right?
I think that's a shame. Look, I think there's a certain line. Look, if someone's out here using, you know, certain slurs and stuff, of course they should be fired. Right. But I think Kelly, you know, I think we were so heightened then that some of the stuff that Kelly said, it's not as controversial now looking back in retrospect. And I also think,
oh, you're right, we would laugh it off maybe a little more.
Yeah, and that, you know, and it's funny when you look back. I mean, even some of the things that people got in trouble for during that whole period, and then you look back now we're out of it, because it's like we were all on edge. I mean, there was a lot going on. Obviously, there was the election, there was the COVID, which is a once in a lifetime like global health crisis. There was the BLM protest. There was so much going on, and so everyone was on edge. And then when you get out of that bubble and you look back, some stuff's not so bad. And I think I think the political correctness messed up some of the shows big time. I mean, Vanderpump Rules being the main one, because they had like all this all-star talent that they just cleaned house. And it was just like, what are you guys doing? And then they brought in all these new people as well. And then the new people didn't gel so much, but by the end of the season, you're like, okay, we've had growing pains. I think they're fitting in now. And then they got rid of all of them too. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? I think when it comes to the sensitive issues on these shows, I think you need people like Kelly who will stand up for what they believe in, even if the viewers don't agree. Because I think what happens when, I think Garcelle, who's been great on Beverly Hills, by the way, she's been a really good fit on that show, but she had an issue with Kyle where Kyle called her out for not paying a charity thing. And then Garcelle pulled her aside and said, well, you know, is that a microaggression? Is that racially motivated? And if that had been a different scenario, Kyle would not have taken that line down. But then, because I think Kyle was scared of being, you know, cancelled or getting the Kelly Dodd image on her, she rolled over and played dead and spent the rest of the season trying to be like Garcelle's best friend. And I think that that's when it's an issue, when people aren't confident enough to go, actually, no, I didn't mean it like that. How could you bring that up? So I think that's why it's good to have someone like Kelly.
Yeah. Who's willing to kind of get in that terrain.
And take those bullets and go, no, this is my opinion, and I'm not going to be scared of kind of the viewers or the cancel culture, as opposed to some of the other girls they'll freak out and go, well, I don't want to weigh in on this because the viewers will think this, and then
they play it safe because they're scared for their position and how they're going to be perceived. Totally. And that's the thing that made Kelly so great, and you're touching on it. She's never afraid to speak her mind or to, you know, get to put her foot in her mouth, and she admits it, and she would laugh it off, and she'd apologize. And that was what made her a great housewife. I think you're right. I think the timing, everybody was super heightened. We were sensitive to things, and she just came off looking so sort of gross at that timing it all. But I will say she is messy, and maybe some of her viewpoints are a little off, and she needs to sort of recalibrate or talk to someone, get a coach.
She does a bit. I mean, she's gone off the deep end a bit since leaving the show, which is a bit of a shame to see. I do wish she would like reel it in a little bit. But I think
she asked me to do her podcast. I'm like scared, jocked, to even like go in there.
You should do it, but you don't actually.
I'd be like, sorry, I can't talk about that.
because she wants you on because she has a certain thing that she wants to get out about mm-hmm. another cast member. So mm-hmm. like, I wouldn't put myself through that.
Right.
I love Kelly Dodd. When Kelly Dodd first came on in that season 11, were you guys like, okay, we've found it. Like, this is, we've got a superstar for OC. Or was it a bit like, this might be too much? Because the other women during that season, because they'd never seen that level of, you know, when she screamed at sushi night and stuff.
God, amazing.
They were all
Kiriyama.
I mean, it looked like by the end of it that they almost, so many of them were not even going to film with Kelly. And I mean, Vicky had nobody because that she'd come off Cancergate, so she sort of had to be with Kelly. Yeah. Was there ever a sense of this may be too much, or were you guys like, no?
Sure. I think it was a combination of like delight and horror. It was like, oh my God, this woman is, first of all, absolutely beautiful. And she has the biggest mouth and she's funny. And sometimes like equally intelligent and just so unaware and kind of dumb in situations. And you're just like, oh my God, this is like the most beautiful combination for a housewife, right? Because sometimes you're just like, oh my God, she's amazing. Look at that. How did she come up with that? And this analogy. And then you're like, oh, she's so clueless. What is wrong with her? And I think for me, I was so close to her because I was, my job is to make everyone succeed and to find out what their strengths are and their weaknesses and sort of like fine tune, you know, their strengths and get them in there. So she was so messy the night of Kiriyama. I remember that. And I was like, look, you're going in hard. That's fine. Do it. That's you. It's amazing. Don't back down. But just remember, people are going to want to see the human side of you too. Like, you can't just be at that level all the time where you're just like, you fucking cunt and this and that and blah, 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 and I hate everybody, because you will get canceled. And it's funny because that night at Kiriyama, when that was happening with Shannon and she called you See You Next Tuesday, and then Heather Dubrow stormed out. Like, you used to Google my name and you would find this article about like how Heather Dubrow stormed off set and came to me to say, it's either me or her, you know, kind of thing. And she was outraged, you know, because of the behavior, because they'd never seen that before. But it's like, welcome to the new playground, you know.
This is what I see.
This is how it goes, right? And you know what? You're gonna have to deal with it. It's just, she's on the show. She's got equal leverage as you do, and you guys have to manage it. If you don't like her, then you need to talk about her, and you need to talk to her or whatever. You know, you're not forced to be around her. So it became like a canceling thing, and it was a panic. It was like, oh my God, what are we going to do? Like, this woman has so much potential. She's really great on camera. She's really interesting. She's bringing such a different force to the show. And I think her friendship with Vicky was really important. You know, I think it was, because if she had been an island, we would have dealt with a similar situation like we were with Noella this past season, where everyone was just like, nope, we're not even going there. Because we know, the cast members are smart nowadays. They know if they ice someone out, they don't have much of a chance of staying on the show. Yeah. But Kelly had some charm. She was funny. And even if some of the cast members really disliked her, they're like, damn it, she's going to be good on the show.
Someone like Tamara would recognize that. Tamara would go, okay, this is going to be good for the show.
Even when they were butting heads, Tamara was like, but she's so fucking good on the show, and she's bringing in viewers, and she's funny, and damn it. Like, but I don't want her coming after me. So you're like, the safest thing to do is to befriend her, and then that's assuring her a place on the show. So Kelly was like really good at like sort of negotiating those fine lines there and keeping her on the show as long as she was.
With you mentioned Noella. Okay, so Dr. Jen was just on a podcast. She said that, and I mean, other people have said this too, which I actually liked Noella, but
I liked
Noella and Heather, but people said that she was just acting. It was all fake, that she would be on set and then the camera would go down. She'd go, oh, that was a great take. The viewers will love that, and that nothing was authentic. Can you, what's the truth on that?
My take on it, I never witnessed any of that. My take on it is that, you know, again, she's a new cast member. Of course, I'm close to her. I know how she talks. She is up here all the time. She is just extra, you know? She is a big personality. She's flighty. She's brilliant. She's, aloof and hyper aware. She's like all these weird mixes of just this beautiful, brilliant force, but she's also like kind of like clueless at times too, right? Which could be like a Kelly Dodd, which is a great combination. I think for Noella, it was just really hard for the other women to connect to her because she just operates on a different frequency. And I think that she had so much potential in that forum, but because of what happened between her and Heather, it just got really messy and toxic. And I think, you know, unlike Kelly,
it gets repetitive too as a viewer. Like, you don't want to have another season of that.
And you don't. And I think the thing is like, and we saw it play out, like the other cast members were like, not going to touch it. And they're not going to go side. They weren't going to go side with Noella because, you know, what Noella was alleging and this and that, there was like no proof. And then she was caught. She was claimed that she had, you know, not seen it herself and therefore she had lied and it got really messy. So everyone was like, I'm not even touching that. So good luck with that one. And I think that was unfortunate, just the way it all played out, because she's got a lot of potential. And I've said this before, unfortunately, we couldn't go into her personal life like we want to with Housewives because of the divorce with her very powerful husband.
I would like
husband.
To see her personal life the second season because I love how open she is about all of this seeking.com and sugar baby type
Interesting,
stuff.
Right?
And I'm like, wow, imagine following that. Because, I mean, she's like the face of seeking.com or something now. Like, let's find out about the sugar baby lifestyle. We're all curious about it. She's confident about it. You know, no shame to her. Like, she's a beautiful, glamorous woman. Like, she should be with a wealthy man, you know, that can provide the things
she
wants
to
go for. Yeah, so I would have liked to see that. The last season with Vicky, when she was demoted to a friend, one of the housewives, this wasn't Tamara, but one of the housewives told me that Vicky spent that whole season just going, doing too much basically for the cameras to, I don't know, maybe get upgraded again. And that a lot of it actually had to be left out because it was too much. Is that true?
Oh, that's interesting. I think that it was really tricky what was going on with Vicky because she, you know, she always claimed like she didn't really know what her position was, you know, throughout the season. And it was a hard situation for all of us, producers and her alike and the other cast members, because, you know, when you are the stature, the icon of Vicki Gunvalson, you know how to operate on a certain frequency and you don't want the other cast members to think that you've been demoted, you know? So I think there was just a lot of, and sometimes people don't know exactly what their role is going to be throughout the season. Like they could start off as a friend of, and then become a housewife. Like it's not uncommon that happens because you kind of want to see how things play out. Right. But with Vicky, it was, you know, it was so tough because I was just like, oh my God, like I'm coming on this season and it's like, you know, she's the original, she's the OG. And, you know, you guys are, maybe she's going to be demoted and I have to work with her. And so she had a very tough time with it. So I don't know that she was playing things up for camera because of that, but you know, everybody does when the cameras are around. You always sort of find a way to like be relevant. It's the real gift is to how do you be relevant without seeming like you're thirsty to be relevant, right? Mm. And that's like a craft that a lot of these women have and some of them lack. So maybe they were sensing it from Vicky and, you know, because there were some moments where you're like, oh, where did that come from, right?
So, okay, outside of the OC, you joined as a producer on Beverly Hills season 5, which that was an interesting time because that was sort of a transition into a new era of Beverly Hills.
It was.
A new phase because you had Lisa Rinna come on, Eileen Davidson, and then the season after that, Kim and Brandy left, who were sort of the mainstays of the original run, and then you got like Erica Jane, and it just became sort of a different show. What did you think of Eileen as a housewife? Because Eileen is actually my favorite Beverly Hills housewife of all time.
By the way, one of the most delightful, lovely people. I think some of these actresses or former actresses, in her case, she's still acting, are the best, right? They know the business. They know how to show up. They know how to respect their producers. Some of these women don't, and that's a problem. But she does. I love her. Like literally, like she's so great. And you know, I treat everyone equally, and I give everyone my equal attention wherever is needed. But she has a special place in my heart. She was so good. This is an interesting thing, though. Like when you are an actress and you come into this reality TV realm, it can be very jarring because, you know, you spend your whole life handed a script and you're talented and you've got the skill set and you know how to get into character, right? There is none of that, or there shouldn't be that sort of process in reality TV. You need to show up and be yourself. Yes, do people heighten things? Yes, do they turn it on and amplify it? Of course they do. And if they're an actress and they're Lisa Rinna and they want to like break a glass and the impulse is there, maybe. But I think that I remember with Eileen that she struggled with that a little bit. She was like, I was like, Eileen, you gotta give your opinion. Like, you have to talk more. Like, you're a great listener and everyone loves you, but like, I don't know where you stand on some of these things. And she, after like, I don't know, several weeks, she started like inserting herself. And I was like, oh my God, this woman's great. And she did a really great job.
She was so clear in the confessionals and stuff too. Yes. I mean, I just feel like she so just smart. Walked through all the bullshit. I mean, one thing Eileen needs to get credit for is I think, she saw through LV. I mean, look, I'm sure everyone could see through LVP's bullshit, but yes. She kind of made it an issue before even Lisa Rinna did. Because I remember that season, Lisa Rinna seemed a little bit scared to go against Lisa Vanderpump, and Eileen was actually the one that was like, no, I see something's going on here, some manipulation. Yeah. And then she was sort of, I mean,
that was a scary thing to call out, right? Like, who goes on a show and goes up against LVP?
Was she scared? Was Eileen scared? Like, she still did it, but I can imagine behind the scenes, she must have been like, oh God, I'm being like gaslit here. And I mean, it was so mean, I think, how Lisa Vanderpump treated it. It was horrible.
She was. Well, she did. She looked down on her, I think, a little bit because she wasn't this like, you know, glamorous, uber, uber rich person. I mean, that's the thing. Eileen is wealthy and accomplished and she's famous and she's gorgeous. So there's also, like, don't forget Lisa Vanderpump was an actress back in the day and Eileen is still acting. So I think there was a sort of weird jealousy thing going on in there. And so I think LVP in her sort of cunning way was able to sort of like say, oh, darling, a Ford Flex, what's that? I can't remember if it made the show, but I remember interviewing her and she was like making fun of her car. And I was like, oh my God, this is, but it's very Lisa Vanderpump. Like, she's like, Ford Flex, what's that? And you're like, oh my God, it's hilarious. But
it's so mean though, because it's like Eileen was probably the nicest one on the show. And then it's like you go up, like, to go after her of all people.
Well, you know what? When you are really nice sometimes too, there's a target on your back because, and some of these women will go after you. You have to sort of like show that you can take it and dish it back. And I think part of the growing pains for Eileen was like, how do I still be who I really am, which is what she's supposed to be. And she was, she's a lovely person. And know how to fight back in a meaningful way where I can win this thing. And you know what? Lisa Vanderpump is a formidable opponent, you know, good luck with that one.
I know. Well, I think that Eileen's approach was interesting on her third season because Lisa Vanderpump was still trying to jab at her and get a reaction. And Eileen's mindset seemed to be, you know, I've been through this, like, I'm not going to take the bait this time by. And true. She sort of didn't engage and then it kind of killed it.
Right. Well, and then it's like you don't have anything to work with anymore, right? Like, if you don't engage it, like, you also have to know, like, okay, I'm not going to engage on a certain level because I've been through this before. But like, someone's handing you an opportunity to keep this thing going. And that's the challenge too on these shows. It's like, even when, you know, I've told some of these women, it's like when things get really uncomfortable and you're the object, you know, you're the one that people are going after. You have to remember, look, that gives you an opportunity to retaliate and to speak your mind and to set the record straight. And that's really good for the show. And it's good for you and your place on the show, even though it might not feel good. You know, you just have to have that voice.
Do you ever feel bad as a producer? So you're behind the scene or a showrunner. And you're seeing what's going down and you see, it doesn't have to be Ali, it could be anyone. The nicest person on the show is completely being set up. Like, someone that's a bit more cunning has set them up and now they're making this nice person come off like the villain. And you know they're not the villain, they didn't do anything wrong, but you can see where the storyline's going. And you obviously can't really interfere because you've got to follow reality as it happened. Are you ever sitting back, like, just feeling hot, terrible, going, oh, this poor person's going to come off looking really bad and I know that they didn't do this?
100%. You know, you have to be an impartial, like, sort of, I sort of guide it, right? Director, coach, whatever you want to call me. And it hurts when you see nice people getting taken advantage of or being taken down, right? And then the nasty person is like going to win, right? Like, I've seen that over and over and over again. And you're just like, ah, but you know, I can't put my hands in it. The thing I can do is remind someone, hey, you have a voice here. Like, how are you feeling? And what do you know? And what are you going to do with that information? Because, you know, I can tip people off in a way that is safe without getting my hands in it and the production company getting their hands in it and say, and some producers have gotten in trouble for that. They go a little too far, right? But that's the art of what we do, is you have to not – put your hands in it, because then you become part of the storyline, which is never good for the show. And people have lost their jobs over that. So
I can imagine.
So you have to just, there's a craft to that. So, and nobody has the exact formula for it, but we're all trying to figure it out. And guide them and say, look, this is an opportunity for you to speak your mind. And, you know, tip them, like give them an opportunity to get in there and discover it for themselves. Like, this is where I have to stand my ground. This dinner party tonight, like, we haven't heard from you. You haven't talked to this person in a while. Like, what are you going to do? Are you going to manage it? Like, you already know that some of them have said that this person was talking about you in this sort of way. Are you going to engage it? And they're like, no, I'm not going to engage it. Well, are you sure you don't want to engage it? Because maybe you should, because if you don't, then you don't have a voice. You can go that route and then hope that they can step up to the plate and they can sort of like win their side of things, right? And then the other person too equally gets our attention. It's like, okay, well, they're not responding. So it looks like you're you know, I don't know. Like, yeah, where are you gonna go with this, right?
Is it hard to work with some of the people, like maybe the Lisa Vanderpumps and the Teresas and the Ninis, because the quality that they all seem to have is, one, they're enormous fan favorites and they bring in a lot of money and they're very powerful. They also, I think they're wrong in like every situation, and they all three of them seem to take zero accountability for anything ever, and they get away with it. I mean, is that, that's got to be weird as a producer, like
oh my gosh, witnessing it? Yes, when you see like total corruption, whoever's dishing it out, it's never a great feeling, right? Because it's you're also viewing this while you're producing it, right? And there's certain moments that you cringe over and you're like, oh my God, is this really going to go that way? Like, yeah, I talked about this the other day. It's, you know, the cancer season 10 of Orange County. It was like, oh my God, this is so nasty. Like, they're claiming that this man is faking cancer. This is really dirty and disgusting. And like, I don't know if I can myself watch this disaster unfold. And then we all know what happened, right? So
yeah,
you just stick to it and you hope that the players inside the box like figure it out, and they hold each other accountable in a meaningful way, and they stand their ground, and some people will be scathed by it. But you know what? Like, as long as everyone's physically intact, like, we're all going to get through this, right?
Yeah.
But yes, it can be hard. And the worst part is when you're working with someone who is just so nasty, and they are just so selfish, and they're just so narcissistic, or whatever, their values in your opinion are just so far off the mark, but they portray themselves as this like upstanding moral compass for the world. And they're just
Phaedra nice. Phaedra Parks is probably a good example.
Which one?
Phaedra Parks. I mean, right? With Candy, I mean, it was just so vile.
Right. Some people might say that, right? And so you just, you know, it's hard. It is hard to sort of like watch it on,
yeah,
you know, and not being able to do anything about it. And you're like, oh my God, like, give me a wig. I'm going in. I know exactly what to say right now. Put me in, coach.
Did Lisa Rinna, so obviously you were there for Lisa Rinna's first season and over the next seasons, did she understand the assignment from day one, or did she grow into that?
She knew. I think she's a soap opera actress, and I know Eileen is too, but of a different sort. I think Lisa Rinna is just so smart and sharp and just ready to, she's very funny. You know, she knows how to crack a joke. She knows how to jump in there. She knows how to be heard. She knows how to be loud. She knows how to insert herself and to rub people the wrong way and laugh at it. And I think she's just wired that way, you know, and I've had conversations with her where she is just so shady and so funny, and then she can be just like a really heartfelt, nice, kind person too, you know, like she can be a little bit of the quieter side. I think though, when she's on camera, she is on and she's ready to go, and she, and you know, if you drop a crumb, she's gonna go for it.
Oh yeah, well, her biggest thing is just sniffing out bullshit, so if yes, she thinks someone's that not, that's really like the trigger for her, I think. Yeah, like when she says own it, I think if someone owns it, she'll just drop it. But if they don't own it, she's going to like, she'll just go to the end of the earth to.
That's a good point too, because like, you know, she discovered that while she was on the show. And I think some of these women learn a little bit more about who they are on these shows, you know, which is who they really are. But like, now that they're in this forum, like there's a process of self-discovery. Lisa Rinna has discovered who she is on this show. And she's an excellent villain.
I agree with her in everything she does, though. I think sometimes she goes a bit too far. Like, she was a bit too mean to Denise, but I think that, I think everything she's called out, like, I mean, what has she been wrong about? She was right about Kim. She was right about Lisa Vanderpump. She's literally right about everyone. I don't think she's ever been wrong.
Yeah, but she's not going to go in unless she knows that it's true.
The viewers hate her so much, which is crazy because she's kind of like...
But do you think they love to hate her? Isn't she that person?
It would be another Tamra Judge situation where then as soon as she's gone, they're like, we want her back.
I could see that. If she were ever to leave, I hope she doesn't. But if she were ever to leave, it could be a step away situation and then a palette refresh and back comes Lisa Rinna.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's been really going off a lot on social media, which is a little... I feel like she's going through it a bit. So I feel she does do that.
She deletes a lot. She goes out there, but that's her, right? It's like knee-jerk reaction. I'm in. F you. I'm going to punch you in the face. And then I'm going to step back and delete it and go, oh, I'm sorry. That maybe wasn't the right thing to do.
Was the Munchausen stuff hard to film? Because I feel like that was one of the first seasons where the fourth wall was really broken, because the storyline of the Munchausen wasn't so much Yolanda has Munchausen, and it was like, did these women invent this for a storyline on the show?
Right.
And that was something that Bravo was not breaking the fourth wall very much until then.
That's true.
Was that a conversation behind the scenes of like, how much can we show of this?
Yes. I think when, as the shows have evolved, more fourth wall stuff has been included, because these women have gotten so smart at the game that a lot of them were sort of doing stuff off camera, knowing that it wouldn't make it on camera. So if you eliminate that rule and you say, look, there's no limitations here. If you're saying something off camera and someone learns about it off camera, that other person's going to come on camera and call you out on it and say, oh, I heard this off camera, and they don't want us to talk about it. Because then that calls out the crookedness of what that person was intending to do to begin with. So that's now become part of the show. Sometimes it's not that interesting. In this case, it was very uncomfortable to hear. I remember it was not that far off of coming from the Brooks cancer stuff, and everyone's like, oh my God.
Yeah, of course.
Faking, an illness and this and that. I remember I was in the field with Lisa Rinna and Yolanda when they kind of came to terms with it, and Yolanda was sharing like her lab results and parasites and all this stuff. And I was like, oh my God, this is so invasive, right? Like, this is this woman's, I mean, whatever you feel about Yolanda, whether she was faking or not, I mean, I think people still are questioning it. It's still awful, because that's the story that's being told. And this woman has to sort of live it like it's a reality, whether she was making it up or not. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Talk about it. How dark do you go, Jacques? How real do you go? How real do you get? It's always a conversation that we're talking about with Brooks's cancer, with, during the COVID season with Bronwyn, like the BLM and the political viewpoints. Like, how do you steer this thing? There's never really a right answer, but like I think the right instinct is to keep it as real as possible. Without it feeling like people are doing it just the sake of hurt someone else,
Yeah, well, I think it's about, is there a storyline and is there like substance to this? I think that's why Dorinda has recently been so poorly received, because, and on Girls Trip, I find her like unwatchable. I mean, I thought she was horrible in New York the last few years too, because it's kind of like, there's not a storyline to that darkness. It's just like, you're just drunk and being mean. Like, it's always like bad girls club, and Housewives is sort of meant to be a level above that, where it has more substance and more storyline. It's not just like, let me say nasty things to people without any context.
Yeah.
So that's difficult to watch. Okay. Wait, I've got a few more questions. You worked on Potomac season 3 and 4, which that was an interesting time because, that is really when that show was getting steam. Because I think Potomac is probably like, it's the best. For me, it's the best with Beverly Hills. And I think it's sort of the fan favorite franchise and cast is like, it's such an all-star.
So proud of that. And I'm so happy for them. I love all of them. And thank you for saying that, because I think when I came in, it was already made a splash, and it was two seasons of it. I think the women were finding their legs, and they were figuring out what is this weird playground that we're in. And my mantra for them was, be yourselves. Like, like whatever happened these last two seasons, like whatever your opinions were, like, let's just push that all away. Like, where are you now? And how do you guys feel about each other? Because you're all gold. We all knew that. Like, it's an amazing group of women. And gosh, they're just so shady and funny and smart and sexy and just hilarious. Like, Karen Huger is one of the, you know,
she's like a legend. She's so a
legend. She is like, when you're with her, you're just like, you're in the presence of some amazing person. Right. And she's just such a hot mess, but also so dignified and so smart. And just, she's so fascinating. I loved working with her. And Giselle is just like from another planet, just beautiful. And, you know, and she's got such a great attitude. Like,
okay, who's the most bloodthirsty housewife out of Lisa Rinna, Giselle, and Ashley?
In terms bloodthirsty.
Of, yeah, they got to get the job done.
Lisa Rinna, Giselle, and Ashley. Not
they
Giselle.
Will go there.
Giselle will go there, but I think Giselle knows when to just stop. She'll throw something at you, and then she'll just sort of back off. I think Lisa Rinna. I think she wins the trophy there. I think Ashley is good at it too, but I think Lisa Rinna's like just been at it maybe a little longer in her life.
How interesting is Ashley that is she the okay, if I think about all the housewives, does anyone share as much as Ashley? I mean, the stuff that she put on that show,
good point.
From her, you know, anal tears to Michael's issues to like, and then she gets in there with the drama and stuff too. I don't know if anyone like gives as much as Ashley.
I would agree with that. I think she is just, and she's such a natural at it. And she's just so bold and confident and beautiful. And she's got all the right ingredients. And, you know, but with that said, I do know that with all of the women we're describing, it takes a toll. It's not easy, you know, and it's hard. You can't rewire them, but I know sometimes they think, and I've had this conversation with Ashley, it's like, oh, do I have to keep doing all of this? And it's like, the answer is, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you're talking about drama or whatever. It's like, no, you don't. You actually never have to do that. Like, that's not your job. Like, you just have to be yourself. It just is who she is, you know? And it comes so naturally for her. And she just puts it all out there. And I think she's mildly amused by it all, like as she's going through it. But I also know it's hard. It's hard work, man. You're on the camera doing all of this and opening up your life. And then you have to like defend yourself when people are coming after you.
Had the season with Michael Darby grabbing the cameraman's ass.
Yeah.
How does that decision come out to put that on the show? Because that's, you know, that can raise so many kinds of issues. Like, there must have been like, can we even show this? But then it was like the main.
Yes, story. There was those conversations because, you know, when you get into legal disputes and you're part of it, especially as a production, that's the scary thing, you know? But when it becomes a story in the news and the media gets a hold of it, you kind of have to get ahead of it and you have to sort of like follow exactly what's happening, because if you don't, it's like, well, who were you protecting? What were you hiding? And then the viewers do sniff like sort of inauthenticity. Like I think when those things break in the news and we follow it on the shows, like everyone's like, yeah, okay, this is why we watch reality TV.
Yeah, exactly. And were you involved at all in bringing Katie Ross back for season 4? Because I love Katie on Potomac.
She's so good, right? Well, I think, you know, there had been rumblings. I remember when Bravo and Truly Original were looking at me to run season 3, they asked me that question without telling me what their plans already sort of were. And I loved her. I couldn't believe her.
She left after the first season, but without going into specifics, like, would it be safe to say it's her stuff she has on in her personal life is probably why she's not on the show? Because when she's on the show,
I think so. I think, you know, we take a lot of that stuff into consideration. Like, this is not an easy job. So if you have some personal stuff going on, you know, like Bronwyn was dealing with a lot too, right? It's easy to say, like, maybe this isn't the right process for you, because what you don't want with anyone on these shows is you don't want them to have, you know, experience misfortune or, you know, health issues or anything like that while they're on the show. Like, you don't want to be a part of that, right? Yeah. Like, we really want to see people succeeding and being fabulous and yes, being messy and being bringing drama, but you want healthy human beings. And I don't know what's going on in Katie's personal life exactly, but if it's too much to be in that space and be on a reality show, then it's not the right process. And maybe that's the case, you know?
Yeah. It's a shame because she's like
great on TV. And I wish her the best. She's a sweet, sweet, lovely person. And I loved working with her. So I hope everything goes well for her.
You've done like so much stuff outside of like the Housewives. Like you did the Big Rich franchise.
Oh, you worked gosh, on you that. Even know yeah. what that one is, Josh?
Yeah, I was looking some clips up on YouTube. Like this looks pretty juicy.
It Maybe was good. It was things. Really good, and it just didn't keep going. And I was shocked. You know, it was big drama.
Yeah, that looked pretty good. And then you've done Selling Tampa for Netflix. When you, as a producer, so when you get given a new franchise, is it a bit like you get certain notes from the network of like, okay, this is the DNA of the franchise. So we need to hit this, this, this. You're allowed to produce it in this style, but these are the things you're not allowed to do. Like, do you get very specific notes like that before?
I think we get, depending on the cast, right? Selling Tampa is a, you know, all black, all female cast. And that was a new show for Netflix. And I know they're diversifying their programming, and it was an exciting opportunity to work with these amazing women. And literally one of the, maybe my favorite cast I've ever worked with. They're just so beautiful, lovely, funny, charismatic. Like they have all the ingredients for a successful show. I hope that show continues on. Tampa was a little tough. It's not the high lux, real estate market of Selling Sunset, right? So
yeah.
you have a formula that works in Selling Sunset, and then you have a whole different culture, a whole different group of people, a whole different geographic area. So you have to make it different, but still have the ingredients that make Selling Sunset successful, right? But you don't want to try to imitate. So you want to set it apart. You want to make it original. And you just follow what the women have to offer and sort of navigate yourself through the best of that world. And that's usually going to be a successful show. And if everybody's stepping up to the plate, then, you know, it's going to be good.
What about Bravo's LA Shrinks? I looked up a few clips. That looked like it was good. I'm like, oh, maybe they should have kept this show going.
They should have kept it. You know what, Jock? You know what happened? It was really good. And we got access to the therapy sessions with some really fascinating people. The challenge with that show is that those psychiatrists weren't personally linked really in a meaningful way that could have kept it more of an ensemble cast thing. They were like more, it was more like, you know, a limited series, right?
Yeah.
You got to see. So where did you go with their relationships? You kind of wanted to see their lives overlap and see them approve of each other or disapproved and critique. And that wasn't really happening because they didn't really have that sort of like, you know, relationship.
You could have just done it around Dr. V. I mean, she's such a
she's
star.
So good,
she's like
she?
Marriage Boot Camp, and she's found yes. a footing in the reality world.
Yeah, she's super successful. Yeah, she was determined too and good at what she does.
Is there a show that you really want to work on? Like just, you know, like Survivor or like Alone, like something like that.
Oh my God, that's such a good question. I'm not in the competition world. So if somebody would give me like a free ticket to do one of these, like the Bachelorette or Survivor or something like that, or The Amazing Race, I think it would be phenomenal to do. I love travel shows. And some of these shows, they go around the road, like The Amazing Race and this and that. I think that is super exciting and amazing because you get to, you know, get to see all these places. I did do a show. My first field producer job was Man Shops Globe, and it was for Showtime when they did reality. And the premise of it was the buyer at large of Anthropology, the women's clothing store. He would buy objects from all around the world. And we went to Australia and met some cool artists there. I'm trying to remember who the artist was there that we met. It was so cool. But this guy would have access to like, you know, folk art and people that were really working in the cultures and creating amazing things and then incorporated into some of his art objects that he sells at Anthropology. Back in the day, they were really unique. I mean, they're still pretty cool, but that show was one of my favorites. I would love to do something like that again, where I can travel, meet artists and interesting people from different cultures and still tell a meaningful, riveting, you know, story.
Is there a gold standard in the reality TV industry of a certain franchise or a certain show besides Housewives, because you've done that, but is there one where like all the producers want to, like, I want to work on The Bachelor? Like, is there a certain one that is like considered like the top tier?
I think when people look at my resume, or people look at anyone's resume, I mean, mine gets me in the door because of all the Housewives stuff, right? Everyone's like, oh my God, and they're all usually fans. Like I've been on so many interviews, Jacques, where it's like, okay, you've got it. They're like fanning out, right? Like they're like fangirling out. They're like, oh my God, you got to tell me what's it like to work with LVP or Lisa Rinna or, you know, Shannon Bedore, blah, 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 blah. This is my favorite. And we end up spending the whole interview just like talking like about that. Like, and I'll give them just enough of the behind the scenes so that they're like satisfied. And then I'm like, okay, you're going to hire me now?
Yeah.
but I would say that, you know, shows like Keeping Up with the Kardashians, it's like, how much bigger do you get? If you got that on your resume, I think that one's pretty darn big.
Oh,
wow. Right?
Yeah, that's super interesting. Yeah, you should come work on some shows here in Australia. Yeah, so what are you working on now? You're doing like, you're working on like shows and pitching and doing presentations. Should people reach out to you if they've got a cast? Like,
yes, they should. Reach out to me if you have a cast. You never know, there could be the next hit show there. What I'm doing right now, Jacques, just to answer your question, I did just do a presentation for Netflix. And I think it's going to be a really big show. I'm very confident they're going to pick it up. And it wasn't my idea. I just showrun it. but yes, a producer, you want to create your own show. You want to create your own material. You want to have your own production company. So we're all aspiring towards that, right?
Yeah. And you were saying the luxury shows are really big now.
Luxury shows are really big. I'm seeing a lot of it. I see, like, you know, from, you know, glamorous dating shows to, you know, whatever it is, it's travel or lifestyle, but it's got to have a hook, right? It's got to be like, and international is really big. You know, we have the Housewives of Dubai. I've seen people pitching shows about real estate in Dubai. Yeah, I've heard, unfortunately.
So bad. Right? But a lot of them, sometimes they start off bad, and then the cast needs a moment to get the chemistry, and then maybe two and three, it can go, but I don't know.
If they're willing to give it a shot, yeah.
I don't even like luxury stuff. Like, I love the Mama June Honey Boo Boo show.
Yeah.
That's so good, because that's just so like, that's, the, isn't it? That's some really hardcore family stuff they're going through. They've got like drug addiction and like custody and stuff. I don't know. Maybe because I'm not American. For me, I like the teen mom, like the grittiness of like teen mom and stuff like that. I find I'm not super into the, you know, the luxury lifestyle stuff. I don't think it's like that. It was interesting when it first came out, like the first time you're seeing Beverly Hills back in the day with like Yolanda's fridge and stuff. But I kind of feel like
that's been played out.
Yeah. How many times can you see that? But look, anyway, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was so much fun.
Thank you, Jacques. This is so fun.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you. And well, I'll keep you posted with the next big thing is.
What is your Instagram? It is tpkelly12 on Instagram. So hey, if you're a producer, you work in the industry, or you're someone that you think you've got a cast that you want to pitch, send Tom a DM on Instagram.
Yes, let's do it.